like I heard it. It don't sound the same. I'm gnashing my teeth like a child of Cain. If this is a prison, I'm willing to buy my own chains. But you take and you take like silks off my sleeve.
To the world. This is BFF.FM.
Good morning. You are listening to TV on the Radio here on BFF.FM. I'm Jessica and I'm here with Leah. Good morning, Leah.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Jess?
I'm great. It's a beautiful Sunday out. What more could I ask for? Today we are talking about two Netflix original movies.
I mean, original.
Oh, well, I one, guess one distributed original. By Netflix.
Yeah, yeah.
Horse Girl, starring Alison Brie, co-written by Alison Brie. And To All the Boys,
P.S.
P.S. I Still Love You, which if a bot didn't write that title, I don't know who did.
Jenny Han wrote that title. The author of To All the Boys
right.
I've Ever Loved, including Noah Centineo, was her first book, I believe. That was,
the
official
title?
Of the yeah. and then, yeah, the second one is To All the Boys I've Ever Loved.
I kept wanting to call it To All the Boys to Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, To All the Boys to The Poisoning.
Yeah. Two Boys, Too Furious. Yeah. Should we start with that one?
Sure.
What did you think?
Okay. I think
let's start with this. Team Peter or Team John Ambrose?
Oh, Team John Ambrose.
I mean, right?
Yeah. No question. Also, his name is John. but we'll get to that. Okay, so To All the Boys I've Loved Before it came out, I think, 2 years ago.
Yeah,
we talked about it. And
am I wrong? Did it kind of like kick off this genre of like Netflix teen?
I feel
rom-coms?
Like it very much did. Yeah. And it was
it
also
launched Noah Centineo.
Yes,
onto
it did.
Onto the scene.
For its sins. Everybody was surprised. It became one of those huge Netflix hits. Everybody was watching it. There was a lot of talk about how it was the first Asian lead in a romantic comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And you look skeptical.
No,
Are you getting it confused with the Ali Wong Randall Park movie?
No.
But anyway,
you mean
there was
the Keanu Reeves movie.
Oh, sure. But there was a lot of talk about that, and there was people generally found it charming.
Yeah.
We did a viewing party. Both found it charming.
Yeah, it was delightful.
It caused me to follow Noah Centineo on Instagram, which I will regret forever.
Because you can't undo that.
I know too much now. I know too much.
I literally remember nothing about it except that we found it.
It was kind of cute.
Pleasing.
It was. So the story is Lara Jean, this beautiful outcast who's not popular.
Right. I mean, that is a fashionable, very classic teen comedy trope.
Extraordinarily fashionable, beautiful teen outcast who's a nerd is anyway, her meddling sister sends out all these letters that she found to boys Lara Jean has written letters to about why she had crushes on them, and she and Peter Kavinsky decide to have a fake relationship so that he can attempt to get his girlfriend back and so that she can, I don't know, be cool. And what was in it for her?
I'm sure it made sense.
What was in it for her?
I have no idea. I thought about it.
People thought it was charming. And what was charming was they had palpable chemistry. It was a movie where the two of them were playing at being in love while to us, the viewers, and everybody else, obviously, were clearly falling for each other in the movie. Mm-hmm. And their chemistry was really charming. Peter Kavinsky is one of those utterly charming, fictional, wholly created out of, you know, whole cloth teens.
I think the thing that was charming about the first one was he was pretending to be a boyfriend and therefore like thinking from a critical distance about what it means to be a good boyfriend and therefore became a good boyfriend.
Yeah.
And that was what was kind of interesting about it.
Yeah. And so at the end of the first movie, they declare their love for each other and get together. And this is the second movie where they're a couple. And somebody else that she wrote a letter to, John Ambrose McLaren, shows up. And it's about her being a lion bitch, basically, for the whole movie.
to, a deceitful trollop.
To two delightful teen boys. To two of the most self-aware boys to ever grace our screens. I thought that this second one had none of the charm of the first one.
You have a theory about why their chemistry evaporated.
They absolutely fucked in real life.
Yeah.
And now there's nothing left.
Yeah.
There's no mystery left on screen. Save it for the screen, Lana Condor and Noah Centineo.
Yeah.
That's my theory. But I just found there was nothing charming about their relationship in this season. They had a very, very hard time communicating, which the entire first movie was about how they were so truthful with each other. Mm-hmm. And that's how they really truly got to know and fall for each other. And I don't think that just goes away because you're like, oh, now we're boyfriend, right. girlfriend. And yeah, I just found her actions really lame in this movie. She was extraordinarily self-centered, which is probably true for a teen.
I did sort of relate to being such a bad communicator that you don't know how to tell your boyfriend about, you know, the guy he shouldn't worry about,
who he
definitely should worry about, or how to tell a guy who's kind of maybe interested in you that you have a boyfriend.
Yeah.
Like, I get that. But like, yeah, overall, I just felt this movie was mostly forced and it didn't really. She was stringing along two very nice guys.
Yeah.
She kind of came out looking bad. She ruined Holland Taylor's beautiful vintage dress by making a snow angel in it. Mm-hmm. That's unforgivable.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was just so like in your face how the sets were. It was just sort of designed to be like one Instagram background after another. Like, they went to the carnival for no particular reason. And then they went to an aquarium. For no particular reason. And their first date was like a lantern lighting. And it's like the movie was more style than substance.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. It's, as I mentioned, it is based on three books. So there's definitely going to be a third one.
There is. It was actually filmed at the same time. So presumably already wrapped, and I wonder if this came out 2 years after the first one. I wonder if the third one will come out probably next Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Excuse me. Also, that was weird to me. This is a teen love, love story that Netflix released on February 12th, which seems like a real missed opportunity to release it on Valentine's Day.
Do movies come out on a certain day, like Tuesdays or something? That was a Wednesday. So
that was it just seems weird to me that they wouldn't have
released
it.
Maybe they didn't want to release it on a Friday night, Valentine's Day, when people would maybe be doing something.
Sure, yeah, that sounds.
A Netflix movie. Although, I watched a movie on Valentine's Day.
Oh.
A quick aside, we watched Jojo Rabbit. So delightful.
Really?
Just amazing. Aww. Like, really a great film. Deserved all the accolades it received at the Oscars.
Great.
I recommend.
Very glad to hear that. Did Scarlett Johansson bug you in it? Or
no,
was
she was great.
Yeah?
It was this weird kind of thing where, like, you know, they're Germans and, like, everyone, but they're speaking English with a kind of funny German accent, and it's a very stylized thing, and she really, like, she nails it. She kind of made it her own thing. It was very good. She was great.
That's great.
Yeah, she deserved, I think, that supporting nomination. She was better in that than in Marriage Story, I think.
Mm. Okay.
But anyway.
Okay, great.
Neither
so,
here nor there.
Yeah, well, anyway, so the upshot is don't watch To All the Boys I've Ever Loved Before, Multiple Boys 2.
What do you think is going to happen in the third one?
I've already read the book.
Oh, okay, so tell us.
I don't remember.
Incest.
They end up together. That's all I know.
Her and both boys.
Her and all
to
five
all
that
the
she
boys.
Wrote the letter. Yeah, that she wrote
I
the letter to.
Me.
Yeah.
I think she's just learning from a young age that monogamy is unsustainable for the long term, and she should just take on both lovers. They both fulfill different needs.
Yes,
you need your boyfriend
clearly.
Who's your like beer pong jock boyfriend, and your boyfriend that you make fun of that guy with.
Yeah. Exactly.
They go to different schools.
You need your piano your piano playing boyfriend and your lacrosse playing boyfriend. You need they do both satisfy different things. Although Peter Kavinsky quotes Edgar Allan Poe to her for Valentine's Day. She just was, and I don't know, that's probably true to your first relationship, but she just was very in her head about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And
which is believable.
Which,
but,
yeah,
no,
is
it just
believable,
didn't make
I guess.
A charming movie.
But yeah, they had one argument and she's like, so are we breaking up now? And he's like, okay, take it down several notches. When Noah Centineo looks like the calm, rational, mature person in your relationship, really take a look at your behavior, because Lana Jean was not great. You know who was great? John Corbett.
Yeah.
I love John Corbett.
He and his wig can still get it. He looks so good.
He looked really good.
He's 58.
He looks really great.
He looks great.
Yeah. John Corbett.
And yet, I still didn't care about his B-plot love storyline.
Oh, I think he and that lady get married in the third one.
Okay.
The neighbor.
Okay. So it's all going to culminate in a wedding. There will be a wedding.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't recall. Yeah, and Kitty, the meddlesome little sister, is just meddlesome.
Mind just business.
Yeah, stay out of everybody's lives, lady. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about Holland Taylor's character, Stormy, was just, I mean, she can't not be charming, but it was just so over the top to have like an eccentric old lady who drinks cocktails and lives in an assisted living facility that appears to be decorated by Caroline Calloway.
Yeah.
I have spent some time in old folks' homes, and I can tell you they don't look like that.
They do not.
Nor do they have the entire, like, prop collection from Moulin Rouge in the basement for some reason.
Yes. Yeah. Also, this was a retirement community in Portland. It's not even supposed to be like LA with like vestiges of old Hollywood in the basement.
Right?
That would have even been a little more believable.
Yeah, it's like where every floppy hat LA girl wants to have brunch.
Absolutely. But it was funny. Holland Taylor showed up, looked stunning throughout. Mm-hmm. She wore a glorious caftan. That gold dress that she wore to the dance, mm-hmm. I would happily don at any point in my life. And she barely lifted a finger. I mean, Holland Taylor took that money and ran directly back to Sarah Paulson's house and did not bother to learn her lines. I am certain that she had somebody mouthing the lines to her. And she still seemed awesome. She was great. But it was so obviously just shoehorn in this respectable, like, actress. And I love Holland Taylor, and I do think that she's awesome in everything she does. But the character of Stormy in the book was a lot more. There was, like, a whole multiple backstories.
Oh, yeah.
And there was, of course, she ends up dying in the book, which I was glad they didn't do. Stormy was actually John Ambrose's grandmother in the book, I think. But anyway, the whole thing was, I wonder if Taylor Holland signed on, or Holland Taylor signed on, and then, what's her name? Taylor Holland?
Holland Taylor.
Holland Taylor?
Oh, I believe Holland Taylor.
I wonder if she signed on, and then they were like, it's gonna be too much to keep her around for 2 weeks on set. Let's just cut it. Let's just cut her roles. Let's just have her look great, and then,
just glide back and forth a few times. Okay, she's done a great job.
Yeah. Also, this is an aside, but Noah Centineo in the first movie was very charming. He's this handsome, lovable Hulk, and he, in real life, seems like a complete, I mean, fine, charming enough guy.
The bloom,
like,
off the rose.
Yeah, he just seems like such a, he's obviously having a great time with being recognized or having Netflix throw all their money at him for him to be in teen comedies. But he just seems like kind of he's a young kid. I'm not surprised. He seems like a young kid who's enjoying, like, oh, hey, dudes. Like, he's, I don't know. But he also, this movie, I was like, oh, he sounds like he's congested all the time. Mm. Like, that's a real turnoff. So, I don't know. It didn't do it for me. I was very disappointed because I was willing to go along for the ride and find it charming again. And I didn't think it recaptured the magic of the first movie.
Yeah, fair enough. Agree. I always ask you to explain animal metaphors to me.
Sure.
So this featured a scene where they are dissecting an octopus.
Which,
gross.
Mean.
And they break up at the aquarium in front of the jellyfish tank.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, what's with all the tentacles?
So obviously, I like your read on it, which is that it's going to be To All the Boys I've Loved Before,
Hentai Nights.
But I do think that Lara Jean had absolutely no problem dissecting this, like, multi-legged thing. And it's all, she's the person who's like, she's the head, and then it's all the boys she's loved before. And she's just like cutting them out left and right as she needs. I did think that it was kind of interesting. He is very self-aware in that she casually keeps dropping John Ambrose into things, and he's like, boy, for somebody who says you don't have any experience, you sure know how to like make a guy feel uncomfortable. And I was like, good for you for seeing through that. Like, I don't know that any 16-year-old boys get that. But yeah, I thought that was kind of her cold calculating thing. And I think it's interesting to show girls kind of being aware of that power that you do get when you get into a relationship. At some point, you're like, yeah, everybody has somebody they've mistreated in their past, I think, boys and girls. But I think, yeah, I would love to see a real dark turn where she's just keeping all five of them going and she's sending out letters left and right and just being a little puppet master. Get at us, Netflix. I can write that for you. No problem.
Yeah.
There is a movie coming like that. I can't remember who is starring, but it's about
a teen film.
Yeah, it's about a teen who, I want to see
catfish.
No, a teen who pretends to be drunk and then murders all the men.
What?
When they take advantage of her. I can't remember what it's called, but it's coming out this year, and I'm very excited for it. I want to say it's like, I don't know. I'll look for that while we move on. But let's move on to
Yeah, do you want to move on? Okay.
Which tonally is just the same.
It's very similar. Spoilers, both of these films end with people floating up into the sky.
So yeah.
That's the connection.
That's
here.
The tie. Actually, let me ask you one question before that. This movie seems very chaste, except for a conversation about sex and whether or not Noah Centineo's character misses it, because he used to have sex with his previous girlfriend. And she asked, is there a big void in your life? And he's like, no, absolutely not. A lie.
Yeah.
A 17-year-old lacrosse player doesn't miss sex. And B, they did this whole metaphor about, she's like, well, it's like if, you know, you've been base jumping and I've never been base jumping. And I was like, that's weird.
Yeah.
And then I was like, is base jumping a reference to like the bases and set? Like, is that what it's supposed to be? I don't know.
I don't think so.
It was lame
comparing sex
bachelor like
extreme sports. yeah, that was
which we all do. That's absolutely how I've always thought of sex as
totally.
An extreme sport.
I mean, it's very much like an extreme sport. Mm-hmm. There was that, and then there was like the conversation with her weird friend who said, like, basically. I don't remember the metaphor, but said, like, make sure you know how to get off yourself before, like, you let anyone else under the hood. And I was like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
Why are we suddenly talking about masturbation in this, like, silly
in wood
rom-com?
Shop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wood shop.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this one goes deeper than I thought.
Nope.
Okay. Anyway, we're going to go to a song, and when we're back, we are going to talk about Horse Girl. Baby, let me in.
Your way, just take my hand. You're lost at sea, then I'll command your boat to me again. Don't look too far, right where you are, that's where I am. I'm your man. I'm your. They mistook my kindness for weakness. I fucked up, I know that, but Jesus, can a girl just do the best she can? Catch a wave and take in the sweetness. Think about it, the darkness, the deepness, all the things that make me who I am. And who I am is a big time believer. People can change, but you don't have to leave her when everyone's talking. You can make a stand. Cause even in the dark I feel your resistance. You can see my heart burning in the distance. Baby, 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 I'm your man, yeah. You lose your way, just take my hand. To me again. Don't look too far, right where you are, that's where I am. I'm your man. I'm your man.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Welcome back to TV on the Radio. That was Lana Del Rey with Mariner's Apartment Complex, and I finally started listening to Norman fucking Rockwell after everyone said it was the best record of the decade, and I didn't think that was really, it's really not my kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I fucking love it.
It's, yeah.
It's so good.
Yes.
I don't know if I've been sad, so I've been listening to it obsessively, or if I'm sad because I've been listening to it obsessively, but really makes me feel like I need a fainting couch in my life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, speaking of women in peril, let's talk about Horse Girl.
Oh, okay.
What did I, off the bat, I loved it. Mm-hmm. I really liked this movie. You seem mixed on it.
No, I actually really liked it. I saw it last night, and I have, when I was watching it, I was like, okay, this is real fucking weird.
Yeah.
But it has stuck with me, and I've been thinking about it ever since.
Mm-hmm.
I think Alison Brie is outstanding in this movie. I think she's just a really, really amazing actress, and she can't look ugly no matter what she's going through, which is disheartening. But
I don't know. I'm happy for her.
Yeah, sure. Good for you, Alison Brie. This movie was really, really, it was beautiful. It was really beautiful. It is weird, but it was beautiful.
It is a little weird. It follows a young woman named Sarah, who it starts off as kind of what I thought was a really moving portrait of just loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she works in a craft store and she doesn't really connect with her roommate, it seems. She doesn't seem to have friends. We see her watching this really shitty supernatural procedural drama alone and making a friendship bracelet by herself, which
shocked is not a real paranormal like purgatory.
That would be interesting if that became a thing, like Netflix was like, well, yeah, we can make that into
a show. Let's make purgatory. Sure. Seems good. Robin Tunney has, you know, she could get some work.
Yeah. But she's obsessed with this show, and then it unfolds that she's endured all this trauma, like her mom killed herself and her grandmother was mentally ill and her father abandoned her. And
her best friend was brain damaged in a horse riding accident. Mm-hmm.
And then it gets weirder and weirder as she presumably descends into mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was just really well done how I felt like I was along for the ride
with
her thinking up until like way past the point when she was doing kind of crazy shit.
Yeah.
And then you kind of, there's a scene where she's having the pipes removed from her apartment for this crazy reason that only exists in her head, and her roommate comes home, and I felt like that was the part where I sort of snapped out of it, and I was like, oh, she's acting bananas.
Yeah, but it also really was ambiguous about whether or not this was solely delusional behavior or whether or not there was a perceived threat. And
so she comes to believe that she is maybe a clone of her grandmother because they look exactly alike, and that she is her grandmother and has been experiencing alien abductions and time jumps.
Shifts, yeah.
Because she, you know, whatever, sleepwalks or something, or is abducted by aliens and finds herself in weird places where she doesn't know how she got there. But then, yes, they leave it open to the possibility that that's really happening.
Mm-hmm.
The movie opens with her at work with her coworker, played by Molly Shannon, who's always delightful.
Yes.
And there's just a second where Molly Shannon sees a horse walk by outside, and that's not the loop is closed at the end of the movie when that happens again, when she rides by on the horse that she stole. So is it real? Is it not? And I thought that worked on like two levels. I just thought it was really beautiful that they left that possibility open, because she, like this woman experiencing this trauma, she's like held it together through all this horrible shit. And then is like when she comes to believe that she is being abducted by aliens, like that's when no one is there to help her. And that must feel like really being gaslit, if you really believe it. Like, whether or not it's true, it's her truth.
Yeah, that was absolutely the thing that was so, like, visceral about this movie, is mm-hmm. you experience it from her point of view in a way that I have never seen portrayed before. And there's the very real fear on her behalf that she is fucking losing it.
Yeah.
And then there's also, like, the part of her that is trying to get to the center of this mystery and, like, having things kind of show up. There were several points where people stopped and looked. Like, there was a scene with Molly Shannon where she looks at her and I was like, oh, fuck. Like, there's going to be some coded thing where Molly Shannon is, like, you know, the phone's ringing and you're like, that's somebody calling to check, you know. And, it just really portrayed it in a way that I haven't seen before. And I do love that they left that ambiguity about whether or not she has just totally lost it. There's the scene where she leaves the hospital and you see Alison Brie standing in the window watching herself leave. And then there's the scene at the end where she's somewhere else and then you see her dress as her grandmother and walk the horse. And so,
And I think it also works to, even if she is mentally ill and all of the things that, you know, we see as leaving the door open to this being real, maybe that's all in her head.
Yeah.
But it works to make us feel like we're also losing a grasp on reality, which I thought was really effective in making a movie about mental illness.
Yeah.
Sort of like giving the audience the same feeling of like losing control
or
not understanding what's real and what's not. But yeah, I thought it was really beautiful. Alison Brie's performance really anchored the whole thing.
Yeah, she was truly outstanding. And I mean, she was amazing from the beginning. You specifically mentioned the scene where she's talking to a teacher about the difference between acrylic and tempera paint. And just, she has a very gentle voice.
Yeah.
And in this movie, she's sort of like mousy at the start and contrasted with her grandmother, who she looks exactly alike, who is this kind of like vixen-y old Hollywood type. I thought it was really strange. Like, you're very unsure about what's happening. And I think that, it was really, really well done.
And I thought the thing that made it's this very unsettling story, but I thought it was, that was balanced nicely with like sweetness. Like, she was so sweet. Her roommate, who seemed like she could have been a mean girl in another life, like really looked out for her.
Yeah, took an interest in her and tried to,
and introduced her to her boyfriend's roommate, played by John Reynolds, who I love and would happily watch in anything. He was, I know him first from Search Party.
Yeah. This is obviously a continuation of the Search Party world, right? He broke up with Elia Shawkat. He moved to wherever they live. And now he's still a paralegal. And
was
then
he a paralegal in Search Party?
Yes. And then Portia was in it as she's undercover as a brain damaged girl.
Was that her?
Yes.
Okay. I meant to look up who that actor was. I thought.
And the guy who did the pipes was also in Search Party.
Was he?
And I was like, oh shit, I was there with my red thread trying to map out. So I really got into Horse Girl. I was trying to map out how this is a continuation of their life now that they've killed Ron Berger,
Livingston.
Whatever his name is. Livingston.
Berger.
He was Berger in Sex and the City. So I really, it made me descend into my own little tiny mental illness there for a bit.
But I loved him in it. I love that they, like, when she was introduced to him and her reaction was like, oh my God, you're named Darren. Just like my favorite character in Purgatory. That made me cringe so hard because it's so dorky and like uncool. And he was not affected by
it
because
so
she's
sweet.
So pretty.
Yeah. Well, yeah, of course.
But yeah, them like getting drunk and dancing. I just thought that was the sweetest thing. And him coming back the next day to get his car and asking her out right away.
Yeah. He was really great in it and really sweet. And she has a terrifying mental breakdown in a cemetery
on their first date.
And I was like, oh my God, like I can't wait to read the Reddit about this like for bad first dates thing. And I was like, this guy, it doesn't even seem like he's the type of guy who would ever do that. You know, like he just, exuded sweetness and goodness in a way that I thought the story that he told about how his ex-girlfriend would pick out his clothes. I was like, that's absolutely who this guy is.
Yeah.
And then he said,
why am I wearing so many bracelets?
Yes. One thing he's like, I mean, I wasn't raised wearing leather bracelets. And I'm like, you don't have to be raised wearing leather bracelets though, to be into that when you get older, but sure. But yeah, that guy was just really sweet. And he was so excited about, you know, like how their date was going. And then something to him was just this casual throwaway remark about the Egyptians building the pyramids, and then there were pyramids happening. And she was getting more and more into her delusion about satellites and people watching. And he was just like, you're just thinking it's kind of like fun conversation until a few hours later you find yourself in a graveyard with somebody with a pair of scissors threatening to exhume their dead mother.
Yeah.
So, all fun and games until then.
I think that was probably a hard scene to pull off.
Yeah.
Because it's so outlandish. But I cried during that scene.
She was really, really wonderful. And he was too. He was just like, I'm not leaving you in a cemetery with a pair of scissors in the middle of the night. And I really got that where you're like, what the fuck do I do?
Yeah.
Like in this situation.
Yeah.
Like, call an Uber. I'm going to leave my car here for you and I'll just take an Uber.
Yeah. Call her an Uber.
Yeah.
She's your problem now.
Exactly. It's really going to fuck with your rating. You need to put away the scissors. It was very, very like moving and a very effective portrayal of mental illness and how things seem to make sense to you. And as we were going along with it, like I wasn't even that weirded out by the guy she was seeing in her dreams. And she was like, that's the guy I see in my dreams. And then like going to his place of work, I was like, well, that's normal. Like you would just check out, like, you know, you'd want to establish a connection with this guy. And then when she's sitting outside his house, I'm like, is this problematic or is this just trying to gather more intel? Like, I don't know. And it was really, it was very strange.
Yeah.
What do you think it was like? What do you think ultimately is the message, or what do you think? I don't know.
I don't know what the message was.
Yeah.
But I think it was just a great way to portray mental illness and what it must be like, you know, feeling alienated from everyone around you. And I feel like even if you haven't experienced mental illness, like it was just a great portrait of like a woman who needs help and like there's no one there to help her, and what it is to be in peril and to fall apart. And I thought it was, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. She really was outstanding in the whole thing. Like she has a real gentleness that then kind of descends into this mania, and you are with it the whole time.
Yeah,
I mean, none of it felt unbelievable to me. I was certainly confused by wide swaths of this movie. Like I didn't understand
there
the
was
dream
a
thing.
Very odd sequence. She ends up in a mental hospital, and then there's a very long sequence where it's like maybe a dream or maybe some sort of odyssey, and a lot of shit happens. And I didn't quite know what to make of that. And I thought maybe that was intentional because that's the moment in which it's you're finally detaching from her journey because it doesn't make any sense anymore. Maybe that's the nadir of her mental state or just completely detaching from reality. Yeah, I was confused a little bit by that. So she gets checked into a hospital after walking into her place of work naked.
I was also confused. So was there an actual shower at her place of work?
No, I think she showered at home and then
showed up
dissociated or whatever she does and walked to the craft store naked. That scene gutted me too.
Yeah.
And her grabbing that fabric that she had become obsessed with.
The peach, because it was protective. It had a protective energy.
Yeah. Molly Shannon was so great in that scene. But then she goes and talks to a social worker, played by Jay Duplass.
Fucking
this,
Josh.
By the way, is a Duplass Brothers production. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he says, like, I was your caseworker before.
Yeah.
And she doesn't remember that. And I wasn't sure if we were supposed to take it that this has all happened before.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was tied to the friend's accident, because I think he also said something about the friend or something. Or, yeah, if this had all happened before with her mom, because it at the beginning, the first scene with her and Molly Shannon is definitely being very gentle and loving with her and kind mm-hmm. of makes allusions to, she's like, do you know what that is? And things like that. Yeah. And then when she expresses that she's been having a hard time sleeping, Molly Shannon's like, do you think this is similar to what happened to your mother? And
yeah.
things like that. But yeah, so there was quite a bit that was like confusing. The whole Darren sex scene and Darren then turning into Darren from
Darren,
the show
yeah.
Was, yeah. I was confused by that whole odyssey, and then confused by whether or not the roommate was real. And
in the mental yeah. facility. Yeah, so she wakes up from this long scene in someone else's bed,
mm-hmm.
and it's the woman who she had been seeing in these dreams
mm-hmm.
in a white, empty room. And that's the other part, I guess, where the suggestion is that it's all real
mm-hmm.
because they've had these similar delusions. Like, she talks about a bridge over the ocean, and she says, how do you know about the bridge?
Yeah, there's a ramp.
And this woman
in the ocean.
Thinks, yeah. at least, that she went to sleep in 1995 and woke up
here.
Now. And
yeah.
like, she's like, and all the buildings are different, and I don't know where anything is. And,
yeah. And her grandmother had always said that she was from the future,
mm-hmm.
and she believes that, yeah.
Yeah, so.
That she is her grandmother.
Alien abductions mm-hmm. are real.
Yeah.
I take you.
I mean,
time
it made
traveling
a
around.
Pretty clear case
pretty
for
solid
it.
Case, yeah. yeah, what else? Paul Reiser was even good. I don't like Paul Reiser.
I can't believe you don't like Paul Reiser.
I freaked out by him, but I totally bought him.
As,
yeah, Gary.
Yeah.
He was a really good Gary.
The stepdad who was largely absent but would show up and then, you know, give her a couple of thousand dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone, if you could go to my change.org petition to get Paul Reiser to change his name to Gary, I just think that works better
yeah.
for him.
He was a very good Gary, I'll give him
yeah.
that. Yeah. And what did you think about J.D. Ploss?
I loved him. I feel like he has a smarminess about him that he managed to hide.
Really?
In
I did not
worker.
Even, I don't know. I'm so predisposed to thinking of him as smarmy that
I just.
Do you
have more mixed feelings about anyone else on earth than Jay Duplass?
Oh, I would definitely have sex with Jay Duplass. I mean, that's.
that
yeah.
wasn't my question.
probably. There are probably several other people like that. That Chris Gere is another one who's always slimy. And he's in You're the Worst.
Oh,
and I'm
yeah.
like, oh, I would. Definitely be in a terrible relationship with that person too. But yeah, Jay Duplass has really made a career out of playing. Yeah. I thought the one thing I liked about his character was he said, you know, I know that this is very real to you, and I believe that this is very real to you. And I think that that's huge. It's also
yeah.
kind of dismissive, but maybe when
well,
you're
yeah,
in
you
a
said, but for the sake of our rapport, I have
yeah.
to let you know that like
I'm
don't
skeptical
believe, yeah
I'm skeptical about alien abduction and clones. And
yeah.
she said so am I. And that's where, you know, she was like, I don't want to be believing all this either, you know.
Yeah,
I'm not this type of person. But
so the fact that she had been there 3 days,
uh-huh.
she thought she had only been there overnight.
Overnight, yeah.
Is that supposed to be evidence that time jumps are actually happening, or just that she's been knocked out for 3 days?
Yeah, she may have been medicated the whole time. And then that called into question for me where he said, it's nice to see you again. I was your social worker last time, if last time was the day before. So I don't know. And the biggest thing that I had a hard time wrapping my head around was when you see two versions of Alison Brie, like when she was leaving.
Right.
Or it seemed like she was looking down on herself leaving the
yeah.
mental institution, and then I can't remember where she was at the end, but then you see this essentially.
She goes all
like,
over the place.
Yeah,
she
one
goes
is
to the plumber's house, she
yeah.
goes to her house, she makes out with Darren. She's
yeah.
quite a journey.
Yeah. But also at the very
she
end
that cool outfit.
Yeah. Where you see her be taken up by like a white beam of light.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, well, where is the other one? Is she still? I don't know. I'm very literal. I was like, there's two people there. I see two people. Explain this to me.
Also, I mean, mean of aliens to fuck with this one woman so much, you know, like that seems unnecessarily cruel.
Well, I think the thing is that they're fucking with lots of people, and some of them, like the plumber guy, are just sleeping through the whole thing and they're unbothered in their regular life. Yeah. And then she's waking up. So they're like, whoops, got to beam her back down. Oh, sorry. We beamed her down to the water tower instead of her apartment. Our bad. Yeah, I mean, if you're a good sleeper, I guess alien abduction is not a problem. That was the real message. I was like, I would be totally safe because I could sleep through anything. So,
yeah, I sleep through everything.
Yeah, I don't know.
I want to see the Rainbow Bridge, though, whatever it is, the ocean.
The ramp
bridge.
In the ocean?
The ramp in the ocean.
Yeah, no, I'm not really into that. So that was kind of my thing, too, at the end. I was like, so has she taken control of this by climbing aboard the alien spaceship and seeing the whole thing and then, like, cracking what's going on? What was the illusion? What, like, the illusion to humans just providing information to aliens?
Yeah,
or...
I imagine if anyone's listening to this, they're mad that we're getting wrapped up in the alien part when, like, I think the consensus is that it's a movie about mental illness.
That's what the aliens want us to think, Jess. The aliens are like, look the other way. It's mental illness, you guys, not alien abduction.
Aliens are gaslighting us.
Aliens are very bad at massages, apparently. She was covered in bruises.
That was very weird.
Yeah.
The, like, clicky fingers thing. Yeah, a lot of weird imagery in this.
Yeah, what are they doing? Why? I mean, they're so far advanced. I don't know.
Maybe that clicking noise was, like, because a lot of her delusion is, like, things that are picked out from her day that, like, balloon into these beliefs. Like, the woman saying that color fabric has protective
energy.
Mm-hmm. Like, she ends up covering her entire apartment mm-hmm. in it. I wonder if that clicking noise from the
that's
alien
saged
fingers,
into shit.
Like, I want to rewatch it.
Was the scissors clipping
through
maybe, the fabric?
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, I don't know. The blender came out of nowhere. That the blender had to be on.
Yeah.
Let's get to some of the more lighthearted aspects of this movie.
Sure.
AKA Brian.
Brian. The perfect, like, roommate's boyfriend.
Yes, who was a bland, handsome guy who always walked in with the top shirt button undone uh-huh. and then, like, you know, the tie loose around his.
Yeah, Brian was great.
Yeah, Brian was great. And Brian
and
has
a concept album.
He has a concept album coming out. I need to know when his concept album drops.
Yeah. What's the name of your concept album?
Oh, so Brian's concept album was called A Baker's Dozen.
Mm-hmm.
And...
I really laughed at this.
Yeah, Darren got into a whole argument about, but have you ever been to a bakery?
Because
a baker's dozen is
13. The concept
is
that it has 12 tracks.
Yeah.
And Darren was like, well, a baker's dozen is 13.
13. Yeah.
And that goes over everyone's head.
Yeah.
And he says, have you guys even been
to a real bakery? Yeah. Versus the bakery of beats that are on Darren's or Brian's concept album.
Man, I should have gotten one of Brian's tracks to close us out with. But
they weren't bad.
Yeah.
I do like, too, how they're having this party and she's drinking and they're dancing. And you have Brian in the background just saying, this is a new track. Because you can't tell the difference between any of them. I love how it's
Something I really related to was getting so drunk that I start doing Zumba moves.
sure.
Which I have definitely done.
Ooh.
This movie hit way too close to home.
Yeah. Sorry, what is your concept album, Jess?
Oh, God, I don't know.
So I have one.
Okay.
So it's got to be about taking it in the Brian vein. My mm-hmm. concept album is going to be about baseball, obviously, okay. and it's going to be called Cripples Alley, which is what I used to think Triples Alley was called. And so it's just going to be like songs and songs about like infield fly rules. Like uh-huh. infield fly, so fly. I don't know. It's still I'm working on all that, but it's going to be about baseball or things that I I love this. Incorrectly believed about baseball when I first started getting into baseball.
I look forward to getting drunk and listening to this. Making you explain baseball to me.
And me saying, this is a new track. You're going to be able to tell there are new tracks because there will be like a crack of a bat in between every track. Okay, yeah.
It should be 9 tracks, right?
Sure.
Unless there's overtime.
Yeah, extra innings.
Yeah.
Overtime. Extra innings will be released on the...
Sudden death. That's how baseball works, right?
Yeah, exactly. Penalty shootout section on the Cripples Alley album. Yeah.
Have you ever
probably getting canceled as we speak for Cripples Alley?
Have you ever suspected that you were a clone?
No, I have not ever suspected that I was a clone. Mainly because my life's way too boring. I mean, no, I've never suspected that I was a clone, and I was kind of thinking too. That a lot of her shit kind of went weird. It did seem like a narrative about loneliness, but a lot of it also really went sideways when she kind of got too much input from the world. Like as long as she was at home watching Purgatory and making her friendship bracelets, she was able to maintain everything. And then, you know, she meets this guy. There's this. It's obviously about trauma and how you isolate to deal with that and how routines and things like that become so important to you. And once that gets disrupted, then you're digging up pipes.
Yeah.
Not a metaphor.
What else? Do you think Alison Brie chooses projects based on whether or not she'll get to wear aerobics gear?
Or nakedness.
She was naked a lot.
She was naked.
Which I thought was I think of her as too, whatever, A-list to be doing nude scenes. Mm-hmm. But I think her nudity was used really effectively in this movie.
Yeah.
It certainly wasn't gratuitous.
She, I think I told you this. So Andrea Savage, who has a show also, on Netflix called I'm Sorry, which is very funny. Mm-hmm. You should watch it if you haven't. Both seasons are now streaming.
Oh, I'll have to watch it too.
But... she has a podcast. Alison Brie came on, and it's still early in the podcast thing, so they're kind of working out some stuff. But I found the Alison Brie episode super charming.
Oh, yeah.
She's real bubbly and like very. She just seems sweet and cute and kind of funny, and like she's always been a ham. She told this story about how when she was a kid, she used to do. These shows where she'd put on a trench coat and then like have an actual hot dog wiener and like show everyone her hot dog wiener. And like she'd put on these family shows, like they would just make it a bit. And but she told a story about that, and she was talking about nudity on screen and how I believe she was talking about her Horse Girl and how it was her first nudity, and saying that she texted everyone should like, hey, mom and dad, like, I'm gonna be naked in this. And she was saying that maybe it wasn't that. She was saying that once she had done her first nudity, then she was okay with it. Mm-hmm. But it is kind of weird to think about, like, you text all these people in your life, but then you don't think about people like your friend Andrea Savage has now seen you naked, you know, like things like that. And she's married to Dave Franco, as we know, and they were talking about sex dreams, and she was like, oh, every time I have a sex dream, I wake up and I'm like, Davey's gonna be so upset. Like, I think it's charming that she calls him Davey. And grown man. But I don't know. She seems very, very charming, and I'm always surprised by her range, and I'm surprised by how, I mean, like you said, a lot of those scenes seemed like they could have been completely over the top and melodramatic and really have taken you out of, or just been like, oh, here's Alison Brie's reel for the Emmys, you know? It didn't feel like that. Yeah. And that's amazing. She's a very, very good actress.
Especially
for somebody who got a start in comedy, who was known as a comedic actress, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think comedy's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a very good actress.
Would you do a nude scene for art?
For art? Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Only for art. That's actually in my marriage clause, too. Only for art, honey. Sorry. Is this art? how about you? Would you do a nude scene?
No.
I'd have to be further along in my career. I mean, I'm not going to come out the gate with
a career.
Yeah, I'd have to be. I'm not coming out the gate with a nude scene because then that's how you're known.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want people to know me for my, I don't know, comedic chops or whatever. My serious dramatic acting. I don't know. I'm just saying I could not have done anything that Alison Brie did in this movie, including cutting fabric in a straight line. So she's maybe the greatest actor of our generation.
I hear she shadowed Joanne's employee for months before doing this
You can
role.
Tell because, I mean, really her really passion about tempera pants, it really, really telegraphed. It came through.
Those mom jeans, man.
Yeah.
That was a real choice.
Yeah, she can't look ugly. She wore this ninja suit made out of peach fabric with an actual like window pane like twisty thing to close your shutters.
Yeah, like a wetsuit.
Yeah, and she still looked great.
Yeah. All right. Well, I heartily recommend Horse Girl. Yes. It got mixed reviews, but I think
really?
It was great. Yeah. I think there was a lot going on there. We're out of time. So let me play.
Or is there going to be a time jump and it's going to be 10:02 and we'll have to start our show all over again?
Oh, God. Thank you guys for listening. Stay tuned for Indie Rock Girl Radio. We'll be back next week. I think we're going to talk about High Fidelity next week, starring Zoe Kravitz. So tune in for that and have a good Sunday.
Updated reimagining.
Yes.